Last week on The Old Mole, Victoria Saucedo and I reviewed The Joker, the much-talked-about film by Todd Phillips, co-written by Scott Silver. We discussed the film as a character study, not just of Arthur Fleck, who becomes Joker, but of the nature of American austerity and the ravages it leaves in its wake. We argued that Joker is very much a cautionary tale and a commentary on our troubled times. Jan, you are a clinical psychologist and have experience with some of the diagnostic questions that people have been posing around this film.
Well, a number of mental health providers have weighed in various reviews on their diagnostic impressions of the Joker, and that itself is kind of an interesting phenomenon, how and when mental health diagnoses enter into popular culture. I think it was effective, that the ambiguity of his diagnosis, that his diagnosis was never clear. He was positioned as someone who was not being helped through medication and was being failed by the system. But there were a number of factors that contributed to his undoing, and I think the film was pretty effective in that way. I did a film a few years back following people who came into the Oregon State Hospital through the insanity plea, through a crime. And most of them, over the course of their hospitalization, had had 8 to 10 diagnoses. And that's often true in the history of psychiatry in general, that people have many diagnoses. There's kind of a diagnosis. They're often fads or some that seem destigmatized, like PTSD, bipolar disorder, kind of ascended and replaced some of the schizophrenias of years back. Often the diagnosis is a way of distilling or reducing people to criteria that themselves are very narrow from the start. One of those important distinctions that has been discussed, and I think often affects how people are sympathetic with the character in a film, is this person psychopathic? Is this person a sociopath or a psychopath? Or are they really psychotic? Are they really, quote, mentally ill? And that itself is a problematic distinction, because often if the person is cast as sociopathic or suffering from a condition that they still have some capacity for reality testing, then they lose sympathies. And here I think there was something about this character and his vulnerability and his suffering that, no matter how you might frame what was wrong with him, held you to him over the course of the film.
I felt like in a lot of the articles that the cart came before the horse, because we actually see Arthur as someone who's experiencing violence and has experienced a certain amount of mistreatment in his day-to-day relations and is vulnerable and precarious in his job and in his world and in the company that he keeps, which is very little. We also see him with his mother, taking care of her. We see a person who's appears to be very functional, and yet many of the reviewers began the story with him being in this state of acting violent.
There has been some commentary on how people with a serious mental disorder, something in the psychoses or serious condition, are more apt to be victimized. People seem odd to others. And of course, his lack of control over his emotion or his affect, this disturbance he had, made him very odd to others. And I thought that was effective, that there was an oddness about him that was hard to diagnose, but led to him being bullied and victimized, and that much of the revenge he took on people around him was also quite selective. It wasn't just random violence, and it became targeted, of course, on his mother, the wealthy people who had betrayed him.
So, and people who were also trying to harm others. One of the main events happens on the train with three men harassing a woman, and this becomes the beginning of his cycle, so to speak.
And that's where he does register as a kind of folk hero, and there's some history of madness as a kind of folk hero rising up and not being constrained by social norms and kind of acting out the grievances of the masses. I have heard people comment that, well, here we have a sympathetic character because we learn he's been traumatized by his mother. So he doesn't have a biologically or genetically based disorder. We learn that his madness and unraveling comes out of a very cruel and neglectful mother. And often that's the forced choice, that it's either biology or environmental or some kind of trauma born of a harsh environment. And I think it's easy to forget how much the feminist movement within mental health in the 60s and 70s rejected that idea of the schizophrenogenic mother or the refrigerator mother, which was, when I was being trained as a psychiatric nurse in the 60s, that was kind of the dominant model of psychosis, that people became crazy because they had a very abusive or neglectful mother, or a mother that was too fused, you know, and there was a lot of that here, a seductive mother that treated the boy especially as an extension of her own body. So it was sort of a kind of flashback for me of earlier vision of psychiatry, but it didn't settle on any one formulation, which was kind of nice. I mean, it wasn't like, aha, now this is finally, we've gotten to it. But I think it's important to understand the history of various explanations for madness and the baggage they carry, including the idea of the schizophrenogenic or traumatogenic mother, which was, I think, a part of the story.
One of the interesting insights a reviewer had in The Guardian was Arthur, following some beatings in the street while he's working as a clown, is given a gun by his coworker. And rightly, I think the writer points to this tool that Arthur can have, because what else is there to protect oneself? This, of course, then piques panic about whether or not the film will draw too much of a conclusion between mental health and gun violence. There are things happening in the film that do counter all of this.
Yeah, I think that the film, its strength and its weakness was how much ground it covered and how it captured so many social anxieties, which seemed a bit absurd because most of the men who commit these mass shootings and the spectacle of them and the power of the spectacle would not be apt to identify with someone who is so vulnerable as this man. I mean, it was agonizing to watch his vulnerability, and you were drawn into that sense of not only righteousness of his impulse for revenge, but how inadequate he was. And I think a lot of the Hollywood characters, the Rambo types that engage in violence, fortify a sense of power that this film really didn't provide. And so it's been much more taken up politically in an iconic way around the world, people wearing those masks, which I think is effective because it's a way of saying, you know, we understand that this is an image that can be used in different ways, but it's not the same as acting out in this crazed identification with the character in the film itself. The issue of violence, I think it did offer some commentary on the false defenses that are provided. And you might say the medications that weren't working, the gun that's provided, all of the ways this man was failed and his grounding and what held him in the world, the relationships that held him, you know, were one by one taken away. I thought a wonderful point you and Victoria made in your review last week, that it's not just about access to mental health services. It's about the ways in which people have some kind of grounding and place in a society, and how people who seem different or odd to others become more isolated and are fair game for those with more power to act out against them.
There's been some interesting discussion, not enough of it, I think, around the question of delusion. As it relates to Arthur particularly, his love of Murray Franklin, desire to become a comic, the way that we all kind of exist in some level of delusion or fantasy about what our lives are.
The center of the stage.
Right.
And this whole interest in narcissism and person who is not a narcissist is the one who doesn't question whether they are one.
Right.
That's actually from Freud.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you got Freud in.
Can't because, quote him
you
enough.
Know, in the old days, it used to be we could find an Oedipal complex anywhere. It's getting harder, I think.
Well, I think this film had a bit of that.
Right.
you and Victoria commented last week that the mother figure in this has not been taken up in the commentary. And of course, that's a psychoanalytic notion too. Some of the most important dynamics are at the margin of what you most readily notice, and that's true in film criticism. Often there's some interesting characters and dynamics on the periphery of what we're apt to focus on, like his violence, for example.
Right. Somehow, other than the mother, nobody else is descending into madness in the film, or so we believe. But all of these characters in some way are living through a certain amount of delusion to consent to the conditions of their lives, which takes a lot of mental hijinks to get through day to day.
The speculation on how to diagnose him, is he a this or is he a that, and trying to find a medicalized container for the troubles he has is itself a defense that I think the mental health field has perpetuated, as though if you can just get the right diagnosis, you can contain this. And if you can come up with the right treatment, that you can bring the disturbance under control. And a lot of the quiet everyday suffering, including that's associated with suicide or people not killing themselves necessarily, but slowly dying of various either unhealthy habits or just general unhappiness, general suffering that isn't as dramatic as what we see in mass shootings, or isn't as dramatic as we see in a film's denouement, that I think with a film like this, you're aware that there's a lot going on that contributes to the scene of violence. The question of what is wrong with the Joker, how to diagnose him, and how to name his problem is itself a defense. And I think the film itself is more diffuse and circulates in the society more loosely. You know, he interacts with many different people along the way. Some of them help him hold himself together, interactions with people. Others contribute to his undoing. And you can see him doing better or worse, like people who have a serious disorder of some kind or are very disturbed often can be quite rational and be effective in the world under certain conditions. So part of what's problematic about a diagnosis, kind of pinning the right diagnosis on him, is that people are dynamic and shift, and that's why often people do accumulate many diagnoses over time, is sometimes there's something different going on. So here I think his future wasn't totally laid out for us early on. Although by the end of the film, I think with the scene of the mother having been so abusive, you could say, aha, This is the real reason why he's so troubled and violent. I would like to bring a different reading to the film.
This has been Denise Morris and Jan Hocken for the Old Mole Variety Hour talking about Joker.